Assalamu alaikum, hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Retail Remix Stories powered by Fyind. This is your place to get up close and personal with inspiring leaders who are not just building great businesses, but through their massively transformative purpose are also shaping the future of commerce in the region. It is our endeavor to bring you insights from strategic growth areas in the region. And today we dive into the fascinating world of experiential retail. And we are very fortunate to have a guest who's been at the forefront of this evolution for the last two decades. Please welcome Ruben, the CEO of The Baby Shop. Welcome to the show, Ruben.
Thank you. Thank you, Dharmendra. Pleased to be here.
Thank you so much for taking time out from your busy schedule. And I can only imagine how busy your calendar is. While on the side, I'm told that you're very exceptionally good with your calendar management. That's something we'll touch upon in a while. Sure. But the idea behind Remix Stories is to get the listeners to know the person behind the professional and in some way inspire a new generation of entrepreneurs and young executives. Mm-hmm. Would be great for us to understand about your growing up days. Where does Ruben come from? What was your childhood like? Any key influences in your growing up days?
Yeah, sure. So I was born off an island. So I was born on an island called Sri Lanka.
Nice.
In the northern tip of Sri Lanka, a little island called Karanagar. Wow. Probably doesn't even feature in Google Map. It's so tiny, but I was born there and I grew up there in a very tough time in Sri Lanka. It was during a civil war, so a lot of my childhood was influenced by that. So I was about nine when my parents decided, given the ongoing civil war, that my future would be outside of Sri Lanka. And so I left Sri Lanka at that young age and landed up in the UK to grow up with my uncle and aunt who had lived there for some time. So as a young 10-year-old, landing up in UK, having been born and grown up in a little tiny island that didn't even probably, feature in the world map.
Wow, okay.
It was a big life-changing moment for me. But that's where, my life story and growth story kind of started. So I landed and, went to the nearest school that was there. I mean, my primary school that I went to eventually got burned down by some kids who was unhappy.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Went to a secondary school and life was tough. And, you had to fight for survival. if you weren't bullied on that day and you went home, not being bullied and survived the playground, that was survival. And those early formative years taught me how to survive, how to kind of grow within an ecosystem. So nothing eventful in the school days. Usual, went to school, did what you had to do at school.
Right.
So the next kind of 5 to 7 years went that way. Did my GCSE, did my A-levels, studied maths, chemistry, physics, a typical Asian background. That's what you went and studied. So I went to university, not really having a clue as to what I wanted to do in life. I was good at chemistry, so I went and studied chemistry at King's College London.
Nice.
But soon after I got into chemistry and kind of in the labs, in the white coats, I soon realized my life wasn't going to be in chemistry labs.
Confined
in doing chemical experiments. So I was in kind of central London. And what I saw around me was the investment banks, the accounting firms and the consulting firms. And that fascinated me. And so I eventually pursued that career, got into investment banking with HSBC. So this was in, 2001. August, I started my career and September 11th happened.
Oh, God. Okay.
So the last things investment banking bankers needed was fresh graduates, right? So that was a big moment in my life. What was I going to do? I studied chemistry, didn't really want to be a chemist, got into banking, but didn't have any background in banking. And the only thing I'd known was retail, because throughout my formative years of while I was in university or even when I was studying, I'd worked part-time in retail.
All right, okay.
And the company I'd worked for was W.H. Smith. So I worked Saturdays, worked weekends, was a weekend supervisor. So they rang me up and said, Ruben, why don't you come and join us? And if you find another job in investment banking, we're happy for you to just walk away the next
day. Wonderful.
Until then, you know, try us. And that's where my journey in retail started. And I always say I was an accidental retailer because that was never my plan. I fell into this. And, you know, I never looked back.
Right.
I never did apply for another investment banking job, and I never did apply for another job. And my journey in retail began from there. So I had a wonderful time in W.A. Smith, learned the basics of retailing, the importance of being disciplined in retail, and grew within W.A. Smith from store environment to head office-based roles. Then from there, I moved to another company called TJ Hughes.
Right.
Which is a kind of a large department store based out of Liverpool. And I had worked with them for just under 2 years as a regional operation manager. But somewhere, one day I was driving from London to a place called Plymouth, which is not the greatest place in this world. And I was just thinking, is this what I want to tell my grandchildren when I grow up?
Right.
Is this, and I wanted a global career. I wanted to, that's what I went into investment banking. Therefore, where is it happening in retail? And at the time, this is about 2006, people said, well, Middle East and Dubai in particular. And one thing led to another. You know, early 2007, I landed in Dubai as a 27-year-old and joined Baby Shop. And fast forward 18 years, I'm still with Baby Shop, and I grew up the ranks to be its CEO now.
Amazing. That's a wonderful story, very inspiring. And I think out of the hardships, you've learned so much that today it's made you a very, you know, on one side, it makes you very resonant with what your ideas are.
Yeah, absolutely.
But on the other side, it also kind of makes you a kind of person, right? Mm. And because you've gone through those hardships, then, and I think now I correlate with why Ruben is the person that he is. I think now coming to Dubai, right? So how is that journey been? You've seen it evolve from 2007, when probably this is pre-Burj Khalifa days.
Yeah.
Until today where, you know, it's the center of gravity in that sense.
Yeah.
So how do you think about, how have you seen the evolution and what's been like the story?
Yeah, I think Dubai and the Middle East has evolved a lot. I mean, so I landed in 2007, March 2007 to be precise. Burj Dubai, as it was known before it came Burj Khalifa,
yes.
was still coming up. So it was you know, I used to live in Burj Dubai, and I used to drive to our office in Jebel Ali.
Wow.
So every day I would see Burj Dubai as it was, you know, coming up floor by floor.
Right.
But the retail landscape was very different. So when I look back at, you know, the Baby Shop journey, we were predominantly a brick and mortar retailer, but a predominantly high street retailer.
Right.
Right. Now, if you think back then, there wasn't many malls. So you didn't have a choice neither. But we were predominantly on the high streets. So high streets of Deira, high streets of Burj Dubai, high streets of the old airport road in Abu Dhabi, LA, you name it, right? We were on the high street, big boxes. We had our own car parking space. We were a destination. People drove to shop with us. Then the malls started coming. Initially, when the malls came in, the first few malls, we didn't enter because we didn't think that was the future, right?
All right.
We didn't think, so Deira City Center, the Lamsi Plazas, Algorez, they were the first malls in Dubai and UAE. But we weren't in those malls because we didn't think that's where the future was. But I guess about 15, 20 years ago, we made a conscious decision the future of brick and mortar retailing would be in the malls.
Right.
And we pivoted from being a high street-led retailer to a malls-led retailer.
Right.
Now, that meant we had to change. So this wasn't about where you placed yourself. It's how you presented yourself. Because once you're in the malls, you're right up against the Zaras, the H&Ms of the world. You can't just uplift a typical, traditional, you know, GCC-centric high street player and put it into the malls. One, the malls wouldn't accept you.
Yeah.
And two, you just wouldn't compete, right?
Right.
So we had to modernize ourselves in terms of look and feel, customer journey, the communication, the entire lot. And that taught us a lot. That taught us to be competitive. That taught us to reinvent ourselves, pivot our business model. And we quickly became a mall-led retailer. Now, some retailers at that stage decided the malls wasn't for them.
Right.
And unfortunately, many of them are not here to live to tell the tale.
Right.
I think that was a pivotal moment when we decided that we would move into malls. And, you know, I think you fast forward now, every corner there is a mall. The second thing has been in our journey, you know, I think this probably was about 10 years ago when, so we are a brick and mortar store. we had a lot of stores in all corners of GCC. And suddenly the digital revolution came around, right?
Right.
The e-com came in.
Yes.
Initially, like all of us, we resisted. Probably wouldn't work in the Middle East. Of course, you know, we knew what was happening globally, probably a global thing. But I think a decade ago, we made that decision, and an important decision, that we would embrace e-com. Right. Okay. And we would become an omni-channel retailer.
Right.
So therefore, we would start investing and we would again pivot our model. And that was, again, a very important juncture in our journey. And today, almost 20% of our business
right.
in our key markets come from e-com.
Right.
You know, we've evolved into a very pivotal e-com player. And today, if you ask me, you know, we're always thinking digital first, but omni always.
Right. Right.
Okay. And that's been a very important shift in our business model. And I think the business model of most successful retailers in the region. I think those who didn't pivot have found it tough.
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean we've abandoned the core of who we are.
Right.
You know, if you look at UAE, at the juncture where we moved into e-com, I think we had about 48 stores. And still today, we had 48 stores.
Nice.
Okay. You know, so stores still play a pivotal role in who we are as a retailer. It's all about, for us, experiential.
Right.
And the ROPO behavior really plays out. Customers are today researching offline, purchasing online.
Right.
Or researching online and purchasing offline. And that behavior continues to play out. And therefore, our model plays into that consumer sentiment and how retailers evolved over the years. So I think the beauty of being in retail in the Middle East, we've been at the forefront of
yes.
what's happening, right? So it's quite funny. We used to travel to Europe a lot to see best in class of retail stores, retail theater, retail experience. Yes. And we still do. But unfortunately, you know, the real theater is on our doorstep.
Right.
And now we're now seeing people traveling down from Europe and the rest of the world to see how is retail evolving in Dubai
right.
and the Middle East.
Right.
And I've seen through that change of us going to the West to see the best of retailing to now the West coming to the region
to the
see,
region.
To see how retail is evolving and staying relevant. I think it's, for me, it's about, and the beauty of the region is being how we've continued to evolve
right.
so that we remain relevant to the consumer.
Right.
How the industry has evolved to remain relevant. I think some of the challenges in the West has been they've just not evolved.
Yes.
And therefore, they've become irrelevant. And
right.
some of the sad stories of some of the high streets that I had grown up in the UK that are no longer there. It just didn't evolve. And therefore, they became irrelevant. And the beauty of this region is we have evolved and we continue to evolve.
Right. Great way to put it. And I think I'll just continue more from a baby business perspective, yeah. right? There's a lot of focus now on serving the shelf versus serving the customer.
Mm.
But the baby business needs more serving customers, right? How do you create a balance between, because I know baby shop stores are experiential in that sense, but how do you kind of strike a balance between making sure that your shelves are stocked, but your customers also kind of spoken to, taken care of?
I think it's pivotal to who we are as a brand, right? So the key tenets of Baby Shop at the core of what we stand for is trust.
Right.
Now, trust is difficult to gain. You have to put in decades of effort to gain that trust, but it can be eroded overnight.
Right.
Okay. So when you say trust, what is trust? Now, trust is trust in the products we sell. That's one. Of course, absolutely. That's a non-negotiable. But it's beyond that. I trust this brand provide me a curated range. I trust this brand to provide me the best products at the best price. Okay? But it's beyond that. I can walk into a baby shop. I trust these colleagues to give me the best advice. Right?
Right.
I trust them to be an ally in this parenting journey. And that's what we essentially are. Because in today's world of retailing, anyone can sell the products.
Right.
That's there. But can you bring the whole package together? So it's product and it's service and it's experience. So we invest a lot into service. For example, I'll give you an example. We have a service program called My Baby Expert. where we have about over 200 colleagues across about 138 stores in the 14 markets that we trade in, where they're not salespeople. They are experts. They're advisors.
Right.
They would sit down with the expectant mother or a new mother, and they would just talk them through the journey. They would talk them through the product that you would need, what's best for you, what are the plethora of products we have, what are the different price points, what are the features, what are the benefits, you know, get you to experience those products and leave it with you. Whether they decide to purchase in baby shop or outside, that's not what they're interested in. They're interested in just providing that service. So I think mothers are today looking for, or you know, the reassurance that I'm buying the best for my child.
Right.
And they all need that reassurance, right? And that's what we provide. And that's what you're able to provide in a store experience, that is this the best for my baby? And every mother needs that reassurance, because yes, there's a lot of knowledge out there. Yes, there's a lot of content out on the,
yes,
on the web and beyond. But you can't always trust that, right? It could be any information. And I think when you walk into a store, when you walk into a brand like Baby Shop, you know, 50 years of heritage and legacy. I think our service proposition is what makes us stand out. And we invest a lot of money into training our people on the products, the knowledge. Often we bring in the brand experts to come in and make sure our people are trained to the best of their ability. And that's a key tenet of who we are, and it'll be a key component of who we'll always be in the future.
Amazing. I think one of the challenges of being in your driving seat is there's a lot of innovation that happens. However, there's a lot of noise around innovation too, right? Like there could be some keywords, buzzwords that keep coming every time. And maybe say, for example, sustainability and things like these just become, at times they would have started off as buzzwords or keywords. Yeah. But then how do you kind of segregate what is it that you want to absorb into your business and some things that you want to probably not invest at that point of time? How do you make those choices?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it comes back to, as a leader, you know, you think, what are your priorities? You've got to make sure your business is performing for today while it's transforming for tomorrow.
Very well put. I'm going to use this.
Okay. Now, it's a combination of both. Now, you can't just be focused on performing for today and forget about tomorrow, because then you won't live to see the tomorrow, right?
Right.
Equally, you can't just be focusing on, I'm transforming for tomorrow.
Yeah.
Well, you don't have a business to transform because you haven't performed for today. So coming back to your question, it's about, there are things you've got to be aware of what's around the corner, but you can't go behind everything.
Right.
So we spend a lot of time looking at what's shaping our consumers. So in our line of business, what are the trends,
right,
that are here to stay? So, you know, we travel the world. We look at innovation, we look at design aesthetics, we look at material play. And then we then have to make a conscious choice. What are the two or three things that is important that we bring into Baby Shop?
Right.
Whether that's in product assortment, whether that's on customer journey, or whether that's the route to market.
Right.
Okay. It's not about getting after everything, right? There's many things we've seen. They said it was the next big thing, but it was just a fad.
Okay. Right.
But equally, there are many things that are evolving and which we know will be the future of tomorrow. So I think it's a combination of ensuring what are the consumers looking for today, and therefore we are able to serve the consumers of today, but equally looking out for the trends of tomorrow. And it's always finding the right balance.
Right. And I think taking a cue from that, for the next, say, decade or so, what do you see as some key areas where, you know, a retailer should probably look at in terms of investing? I think outside of probably technology and product, is there two areas that you think?
Yeah, I think experience. Look, I think experience is going to play a pivotal role in how retail will evolve.
Right.
And it will be a key point of difference between those that will succeed and those that don't quite make it. Look, I'm also a great believer in the omnichannel retail world.
Right.
So I think, again, that model will evolve and succeed. How it will evolve will remain to be seen.
Right.
Okay. So when I come back to the omnichannel world, so what is omnichannel, right? Omnichannel means that you can access the brand through multiple channels, and it doesn't have to be, you have to get in a car, drive all the way, park up and go into a store. But you still have the opportunity to go in, touch, feel, experience the product.
Right.
Both has to be seamless. So I'll give you an example. Today, and this is a phenomenon that's really played out, which we never thought it would play out in this part of the world. In our e-com business, 10% of our business is done through click and collect.
Right.
Right? Now, people say the Western world is pretty high, but you know, it's tough, it's cold and difficult to park. So it works. But here, people love going to stores. But still, 10% of our business is through click and collect. So customers want to see, make that decision in the comfort of their home, but they still want to walk into a store and pick up the product, right?
Right.
So I think for us, we believe in an omni-channel world. I think that's those who are able to seamlessly transition the customer through a digital and physical space will be those that will succeed. I think product differentiation will continue to be a key point of difference.
Right.
I think customers are well researched. They have access to all the information. So our ability to bring the right products at the right price point to the consumers and bring it in as fast as possible.
Right.
And because they have access to all the information, bringing in a trend a year down the line is no longer good enough.
Right. Right.
Right?
Right.
If there is a trend, customers want to see it next week.
Right.
Customers want to see it next month. Yeah. Anything beyond that, it's too late.
It's right?
So that's pivotal. So the amount of energy that we put into research and development to ensure that we're able to pick up the trends, that'll be important. I think the next big thing is, look, AI is something that will play a role. But if you ask me today what meaningful role it will play, I think it's still yet to be decided.
Right.
I think we're all playing with AI. We know it will disrupt the industry.
Right.
Right? But in what ways will it remain to be seen?
Right. Oh, great point. I think with AI, because at Find we have a lot of AI solutions, I think one thing that we are realizing is being able to shift the paradigm of the business, right? So, for example, and this has become my favorite phrase now, that fashion is now becoming FMCG. Because like you rightly said, customers want this today, not wait for a season collection to come later.
Correct.
But so I think outside of AI, do you think from a technology perspective, do you see any other key areas where, because the things like Web3, et cetera, do you think some of those would become areas that could evolve over the next 5 to 10 years? Or you think that's a fad that's gone?
At the moment, I wouldn't be able to comment whether it's a fad or it's here to stay. I think AI is what I see, will disrupt, stroke, shape our industry in the future. Both the classic AI in terms of how we do the analysis, how we look at process automation, as well as the generative AI where a lot of new content being created, how we look at our e-commerce platform and the role generative AI will play. And that way, I think it has an opportunity to transform that side of our business. Even content creation, how we do marketing today.
Right.
Has the potential to completely evolve and one day revolutionize that. So I think that for me is what is likely to be a disruptive factor. But in terms of technology, I think it's not about, in our industry, it's not about technology for the sake of technology.
Right.
It's how do we make sure technology is seamless
yes.
for the consumer.
Right.
I think that's really important. So things like RFID. So we've embraced RFID. So a customer can, pick up a product, go to a self-checkout and just check out and walk out of the store.
Amazing.
Right? That's technology. It's not groundbreaking. It's not stuff that people talk about. But that makes it convenient for the consumer, right?
Right.
I can pick up the product, drop it into a basket, picks up the products. I check out myself. I walk out of the store. That's great innovation that will make that experience just a little bit better for the customer. I think those are the things that I think will make a big difference as we evolve and move forward.
Right. I think one of the key components of retail is people, right?
Mm.
And I observe that you refer to everyone as colleagues, right? So our colleagues doing this work.
Mm.
How difficult is it to kind of get a great talent pool?
Mm.
And while I'm sure you represent an organization that's very well known for its people practices, but But the challenge with talent is the best talent always wants to move on to doing something else. And the entire cycle is kind of at times painful and slow. How do you kind of create a talent pool for growth? And how do you help them kind of see the future for each of those bright performers to kind of continue with you?
No, very good question. I think I've always said, you know, retail is a people's business. It was a people's business. It is a people's business, and it will always be a people's business, right? And at the core of that is our ability to attract and retain the best talent. And I think the true winners will be those who can attract and retain the best talent. Now, that means the talent on the floor, where bulk of our talent is deployed, you know, but it's not just the talent on the floor, it's the talent that is behind the scenes as well.
Right.
You know, your ability to pick up the best designers, the best finance professionals, the best people practitioners, the best marketeers who can, you know, support, grow the brand. So we have a very structured practice in terms of how we attract the best talent and how we incubate them within our business so they can grow into bigger roles and grow with the organization, but also grow within the industry. And, you know, I'm very proud personally. I've seen many people. Look, it's unfortunate. You cannot keep everyone with you, right?
Right.
That's life. Everyone needs to grow, and there is a ceiling that everyone reaches sometimes. But we've grown many people that have grown beyond both Baby Shop and Landmark Group, but right. have grown within the industry.
Right.
You know, and that's also an immense pride to us, that we've been able to groom the leaders of the future from within our business. But from within Baby Shop, you know, we make sure that, you know, once we've got the talent, you know, we induct them well into our business, but we give them the freedom.
Right.
You know, we empower them. You know, we empower them to take the bets.
Right.
You know, we empower them to make sure that it's okay to fail.
Right.
Right. And we give them that safety that sometimes it's okay to fail.
Right.
You know, we're there to pick them up again. And back them up, right? So that they're given enough freedom to to succeed. And I think training is super important for us. You know, we give them the opportunity to travel the world, go to the best fairs, go and see the latest innovation, so that they are well equipped, not just from the region, but across the globe. You know, if there is something that is happening in a different part of the world, we want to make sure our people are exposed to that. So they learn from within the organization, but also from outside. But to wrap it all up, it's about leadership, right? So ability to lead, ability to engage, and make sure that they feel secure and safe in an environment where they can grow and realize their potential.
Right. I think we're coming towards the end of the conversation and maybe leadership nuggets, but maybe like a rapid fire, right? So is there like a favorite book or a quote that you live by?
I wouldn't say a favorite quote. I love quotes, and there are many of them, and I wouldn't want to choose a quote, but a book that I read when I was maybe 24, 25, it's called Execution by Ram Charan and I think Larry Bossidy, if I'm not mistaken. And that defined my leadership style, because it talks about the importance of execution, right? You can have the best strategy in the world, but if you're not able to execute it, it doesn't mean nothing.
Right.
You can have an average strategy executed to the point, and that is more likely to give you far more success. So I think Execution is a book that I read, you know, many decades back, but it still remains my favorite book.
Right. I think all of us are admirers of Mr. Mickey Jagdiani, but outside of him, is there any leader who's inspired you?
No, I had the fortune to work with Mickey in my early years, and he was an unbelievable entrepreneur, Parnon, and I've worked with many people since, and I've seen many people since, but he was a true genius at heart. I know the way he helped build and shape the industry that we see today. But, you know, I've been personally influenced by many leaders. They have shaped the leadership style and the leader that I've become today. The first person that I worked with was a gentleman, Chris Dival, who shaped my thinking in retail, my passion for retail, and probably shaped my career choices. You know, I probably would never have gone into retail if it wasn't for him. So he was my line manager, both at W. Smith and TJ Hughes. But you know, since I've moved into Landmark Group, there's been some great leaders that I've had the fortune to work with, whether it's Vinod Talraja, who was the former CEO at Baby Shop, whether it's Nisha Jagtiani, whether it's Aarti Jagtiani, or whether it's Renuka Jagtiani. So I've had the fortune to work with some great leaders who've helped develop me, shape me. But equally, I've worked with some poor leaders who've also helped define who I am and how I choose to lead day in, day out. So I think you can always learn from many great leaders and not so great leaders. You pick up the best bits, and then, but then, you know, you've got to make some choices in terms of how you choose to show up every day.
I love the way you put it, right? It's call a spade too, yeah. Right? I think, do you have a favorite retail experience or a retail store worldwide that you really look up to and you say, wow, this is something great?
I think there are many experiential retailers that we look up to, but they often end up being, you know, a theater for sake of theater. But I think one mass retailer that I've been impressed of recent has been Zara and how they've transformed themselves into the retail experience and not doing anything really fancy. You know, most people would go in, but the way they've evolved year after year, decade after decade, both the experience as well as the product offering, kept it really simple, but have really elevated the brand. And, right. And it's become an aspirational brand when it was a mass brand some decades back. And how they've evolved that from storytelling to brand building, product assortment, the mix of retail coming together. And I think that, and they've done it en masse, right? Whether you're in London, whether you're in Madrid, whether you're in Dubai, whether you're in Mumbai, you know, it's been consistent. I think that's really important for me. I look up to retailers that are able to consistently deliver great experiences. You can always do one store that anyone can do. You can bring in a top level agency and do a store. But can you seamlessly execute that consistently throughout all your estate? I think those who can do it are those that I look up to. I mean, Zara's one, Uniqlo's another one that across the globe that I look up to are consistently, you know what you're getting in Uniqlo when you walk in, right? It doesn't matter where, you know, which part of the world. It's consistent. And those are the retailers that I kind of look up to.
Right. Amazing. I think with that, we come to the end of our conversation, Ruben. Before we let you go, where can our listeners follow you? I know that you're not very busy or very active on social media, but if they had to follow you, where can they?
I'm on LinkedIn. So I would say LinkedIn is the most go-to place for you to follow me. So I'm readily available on LinkedIn.
Amazing. Thank you, Ruben, so much for taking time out today. It's been a masterclass on retail and experiential retail. I can't thank you enough for taking this time and speaking to us. With that, we come to the end of a great conversation. Don't forget to follow us on the Retail Remix page on LinkedIn. And don't forget to follow us on www.find.com. That's find with a Y. And it's Y because in Dubai, we've learned to say why not. Thank you. Have a great time ahead. And we look forward to speaking to you on the next episode. Until then, take care of yourselves. Be happy and cheerful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. That was good.